The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you doing?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Before we get talking about the United Nations stuff, there's some really good news and pleasant news to talk about, which is, first of all, that last night Israel hosted a match in the French Super Cup. And there were goals from Lionel Messi, there were goals from Neymar, and from Sergio Ramos, all highly respected international players, this time playing for Paris Saint-Germain, who were playing against FC Nantes. They beat them 4-0 in the French Super Cup at Bloomfield Stadium. Not only the football, but of course the fact that these players have an opportunity to tour around, to see the Kotel, to see a little bit about what Israel really is firsthand, and apparently having a great time while they are here. So that was good news. And the other fascinating piece of news surrounds the opening of what is apparently the world's largest emergency room at a Tel Aviv hospital, and this time at Ichilov Hospital in the central part of Tel Aviv. This is an initiative which has been funded by former Canadian Israeli philanthropist Sylvain Adams. That's a name that comes up over and over again. By the way, also associated with the football game that we spoke about earlier, he was very much involved in arranging for those players to come along and play the game here. This time, he has donated around $28 million to establish an 8,000 square meter emergency room in the central part of Tel Aviv.
That's unbelievable.
It was opened by Prime Minister Yair Lapid along with Israeli President Isaac Herzog, as well as the Minister of Health, Nitzan Horovitz, all were on hand to open this new facility. Just a few things to mention about this new facility. First of all, there will be a facial recognition station and digital self-registration, which means that when you come along to this emergency facility, there will be facial recognition to allow you to sign in, to become recognized by the system, and to be immediately recognized in order to allow you as a patient to move forward in the process. The next thing will be a self-triage station after the reception. This allows the patient to have their blood pressure, temperature, pulse, and blood oxygen levels checked by themselves. There's no need for any staff intervention. This is a station where the patient checks themselves in, and all of the stuff gets measured immediately and, of course, obviously registered onto the computer file that belongs to that patient. There are apparently navigation robots, which are mobile robots, which are used to help patients get their way around the facility. There's an app for patients to log into to allow them to be continue to be informed about the progress of their visit, what's exactly happening during the course of their visit. The facility itself is spread onto a number of different floors. The first floor has an ambulatory wing with 30 medical testing rooms and a large treatment hall. The second floor has apparently more than 100 inpatient beds that can accommodate all kinds of patients with all types of needs. It includes a psychiatric emergency room, as well as, of course, an emergency room for various other ailments. There is a rooftop floor that does house already, because it's been opened, a short-term hospitalization and inpatient department with 32 monitored beds. So this is a world-class facility. What I've described is just the tip of the iceberg, all being donated by Sylvain Adams and, of course, available to Israeli patients. So this is really an amazing medical facility that's been opened up.
Absolutely phenomenal. And what I was fascinated by is if there are enough doctors to staff it, but so much of this is automated, which really does reduce that need. And that's so fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the idea to try to reduce the number of staff members required to treat patients, to allow people to do things on a self-administered basis to the extent that that's possible. So simple things like, as I mentioned, temperature checking and blood monitoring and blood pressure and blood oxygenation levels, doesn't really need a staff member to sit with you to do it. It's all automated. And yeah, I mean, fortunately, Israel has, we already know some of the best doctors, not necessarily enough always to go around. But it seems as if this is a facility that people will be really wishing to get into in the case that they need an emergency treatment.
Incredible. Really, really such fantastic news. Prime Minister Yair Lapid has written to the U.S. Secretary General asking him to disband the United Nations Commission of Inquiry into Israel's actions into last year's Gaza conflict. Why has he chosen to request this now?
So Prime Minister Lapid has written to the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and he has requested him to disband this ongoing and open-ended commission of inquiry. Now, there are a number of reasons that Yair Lapid has mentioned in his letter where he demands the disbanding of this inquiry. The first thing he mentions is as follows. He says, I'm writing to you to demand the immediate removal of all three members of the commission of inquiry tasked with investigating Israel and to demand the disbanding of the commission. Now, one of the main issues around the Commission of Inquiry is, in the first instance, the fact that this is open-ended. As a general rule, United Nations Commissions of Inquiry are very, very specific, have a particular mandate that they are given, and have a particular endpoint. In this particular case, the Commission is the first, one that I'm aware of, that actually has an open-ended mandate from the United Nations to just continue to investigate almost indefinitely anything that might be related only to Israel's actions in last year's Gaza conflict. So that was the first issue that Yair Lapid raised in his letter. The second issue involves the individuals, the three individuals who are the members of the Commission of Inquiry, and in particular one of them, Maloun Qatari, who was last week interviewed by a podcast and referred to the so-called Jewish lobby that was creating social media, and then went on to question why Israel is even allowed to be a member of the United Nations. Now, this is a UN Commission of Inquiry that's supposedly independent in terms of the work that it does to investigate a particular issue, although, as we've already discussed, this Commission of Inquiry seems to have an open-ended agenda. But more than that, the individuals, particularly Qatari, who is a well-known anti-Israel activist, this is already not a new thing that we're seeing coming from him, and of course has the audacity to come out as a member of this Commission of Inquiry and to make statements where he says that a lot of money is being spent on efforts to discredit the United Nations Human Rights Council, I wonder why, which set up the Commission of Inquiry. And apparently, according to Qatari, social media was controlled largely by the Jewish lobby. Those were the words. So he went on to say, it's not only governments. We are very disheartened by the social media that is controlled largely by whether it is the Jewish lobby or specific NGOs. A lot of money is being thrown in to try to discredit us. Yeah. Now, it's not only Qatari who's a member of this particular Commission of Inquiry, but of course, Navi Pillay, who is also quite well known as somebody who is not particularly supportive of Israel. And of course, Chris Sidoti, who also has certain credentials as somebody who doesn't support Israel. So it seems as if, though, the whole inquiry and the way that it's been set up, including the individuals who have been nominated to sit on the inquiry, including the way in which its mandate has been set out or maybe not set out, has given the Prime Minister enough information, he feels, to adopt the approach and to write to the United Nations Secretary General. And of course, he does talk about the fact that there were already communications within the United Nations. There was a letter sent to the United Nations Human Rights Council, Federico Fillegas, who then sent a letter to Navi Pillay warning that some of the comments that Qatari had made could reasonably be interpreted as stigmatization of the Jewish people. No. Do you think so?
Reasonably
interpreted. Wow. Reasonably be interpreted.
Wow.
and is at the heart of any expression of anti-Semitism. So he himself has already raised this internally within the United Nations as being problematic. And, you know, I'm not surprised that this is the case. So they are sort of trying to deal with it in their own way. The problem is, of course, that Navi Pillay has already rejected that, saying that, you know, none of that is valid and that they are pushing ahead with their commission of inquiry. Hardly surprising that that's the approach that she's taking. So it's interesting to see that the Prime Minister has now weighed in on this matter. I don't think that the United Nations, not even turning to the Secretary General, will necessarily help us, because the United Nations Human Rights Council in particular seems to want to go its own way, and it seems to have the mandate to be able to do so. But it does mean that quite a number of countries are coming out again supporting Israel's view, or perhaps just supporting a generally reasonable view rather than particularly taking a view in support of Israel. And so there have been some countries that have expressed themselves, the United States, Canada, the UK, some countries across Europe, surprisingly, have also denounced Qatari's comments as being anti-Semitic. So, you know, I don't know that it's enough to really have any impact on potentially disbanding this commission of inquiry, but at least we know that there is a lot of support for the fact that these are really anti-Semitic comments and don't have any place in any society, never mind coming from somebody who sits on the Commission of Inquiry. Yeah.
What concerns me tremendously is these anti-Semitic tropes or accusations are very, very well known. It's not as though accusing Jews of controlling the media is a new thing. We've been accused of all sorts of things exactly like this in one form or another for hundreds of years. I would have, and contestation that, well, why is Israel a member of the United Nations anyway? These are such basic, well-known anti-Semitic statements. Surely somebody who is a senior member of the United Nations should be a little bit more subtle. Does this mean that they are living in such an echo chamber that they are clueless? Or has anti-Semitism become so brazen that they think that they can get away with anything?
And they do. I think that very much the second, and I think that not only that they think they can get away with it, but indeed they do. And some people consider this to be kind of, you know, a get out of jail free card, that they can literally express these anti-Semitic sentiments without consequences. People can just say whatever they like, and there seems to be little in the way of consequences. You know, one would like to think that somebody making a statement like that would be required to vacate their job, would be required to resign, would be fired, would be, you know, there would be some sort of consequence, and they would be castigated in some sort of way. And yet, in spite of these letters that are being written around and acknowledgements of the fact that this is highly problematic, the individual seems to be almost like untouchable. And I think that therein lies the problem, that I know that there is a lot of effort going on to try and make anti-Semitic actions a little bit more, make people more accountable for those actions, for there to be consequences for people who choose to be anti-Semitic in public. But unfortunately, in the moment, the reality is that people like him can stand up, make these anti-Semitic comments, and really get away with it.
It is just absolutely astounding that they really are getting away with it. Hezbollah has once again threatened Israel over the gas fields dispute. How far will Hezbollah realistically take this?
Well, very, very fascinating, because Amos Hochstein, who is the U.S. Intermediary to negotiate the border dispute, the maritime border dispute between Lebanon and Israel, has once again arrived in Beirut. There was this video that Hezbollah shared ahead of his arrival, which was a sort of a welcome, in inverted commas, video, where they titled it as saying, it's not helpful to play for time. And the clip that they've advertised is essentially a threat to Israel and to the American mediator, Hochstein. And they, of course, chose to display Hezbollah's C-802 anti-ship cruise missiles, which they claim was video footage taken from just the last day or two. And of course, they chose to share some footage of different vessels and offshore rigs at the Israeli Karish gas field, which is, of course, the very, very controversial one, which apparently straddles the border, which is currently in dispute. So it's not clear where Hezbollah are willing to end the threats and potentially their actions. The Lebanese government has made an attempt to try to backpedal on this and said, you know, we do not subscribe to the view expressed by Hezbollah. And it's interesting that public statements to that extent have been made by Lebanese politicians who are currently hosting Hochstein and who are currently negotiating with him in order to somehow try to resolve this maritime border dispute. But the truth of the matter is that the Lebanese government are at Hezbollah's behest in many respects, because they are somewhat controlled or highly influenced by Hezbollah, and to the extent that Hezbollah may wish to provoke a war of some sort along the northern border predicated on this maritime border dispute, I don't know that the Lebanese government will have the power to stop that, even with the best will in the world. So this is clearly a concerning development, and I know that the Israeli government are prepared for any possible event on the northern border as this particular issue escalates. It could potentially cause a breakout of hostilities on the northern border. It's, of course, our hope that Hochstein will be successful in his attempts to bring a close to this issue, to mediate the dispute and to come to an agreement which the Hezbollah senior leadership will be able to buy into as well. They don't necessarily have a common view as the one that is being expressed by the Lebanese government, who are, of course, in the negotiations. But this clearly is an escalation which we need to keep an eye on.
Absolutely right. And we will most certainly will do. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. Hope you have a fantastic day. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.